and welcome to another episode of Robbie Cummings Canal Boat Podcast. This is where I get to talk a bit more about a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff that happens on my series, Canal Boat Diaries, which is showing on yesterday and streaming on the UK TV Play app. A massive apology to overseas viewers who can't see it yet, but I'm hoping one day this will go a bit more global and you can see what I've been up to, basically. Otherwise, thanks for sticking with me through all these as we go in depth. And I'm doing these podcasts, if you're sort of listening to them as they go out, trying to get them out every day. It's been a bit of a challenge and I've massively failed, but the idea was to try and keep up with the episodes as they were being released. And we've had one every weekday for almost 2 weeks. It would be on the next 2 days as I'm recording. And when you're listening back to this one, it'll probably be on or after the last episode is being shown. But a lot of people are streaming it on the UK TV Play app. And I just want to get straight into this. So I'm just going to start talking about, this journey from Great Bar in the West Midlands to Atherstone, which, again, is in the Midlands. So we're still in the West Midlands, but we're leaving. This is one where we're leaving the Birmingham Canal Navigations. Get to see towns like Faisley and Tamworth along the way. And I'm going to talk about this, and there's a lot of that I can delve into on this one just a little bit, because it comes up again on other episodes and I want to talk, or actually there's one issue about windlasses that I think makes another whole podcast, so we'll get to that. And this is the first one where I didn't have a cold for the voiceover. You won't be able to notice that, but I just wanted to point that out. But I'll talk more about that in the next one, because I think I do actually get a cold within the episode. But yeah, this, as I said, this last one on the Birmingham Canal Navigations, and I was really excited because I'd spent all summer just on the BCN. For the most part, just, living in suburbia. So I was excited to go out into some more of the rural canal network. But yeah, almost immediately I come to some issues. Let's first talk about my toilet troubles, because we delve a little bit into what I do if my toilet tank is full. And that is, I have this spare bucket, a bucket and chuck it, which is, that's all it is. You've put some toilet chemicals in it and hope for the best. But on the next one, on a podcast, I think I might talk about compost toilets, because, we do feature a company that was doing them. But it just makes me think I must be the only person on TV that is just regularly showing the contents of their toilet and how they get rid of their own effluents. Great, isn't it? Yeah. So I wonder I've got any friends or even a girlfriend. But let's go on to talking about getting stuck between locks, because this has happened before, but this time, it was so much worse. And although I've got my crew there with me, filming, and they cannot help me at all. So I've got producer Stu, drone pilot Phil, getting all their shots, helping me film it for at least. But at the same time, there's nothing they can do to actually help the situation. So what I did to get myself in this mess, I opened the lock gates ahead of me. Going through a set of locks here, so you can just walk to the next one as you're in the previous lock. So I've done that. I've set up the gates, but then suddenly I've got something wrapped around my propeller, and I decide, right, well, instead of going on to the next lock, I will just quickly sort it out whilst I'm in the lock pound. That was a big mistake. I should have got onto the next lock. Whether or not it was impossible due to what was around that, I think there was too much weed, and it would make the engine smoke too much if I too much pressure on the propeller. So in some ways I made the right decision, but in other ways, because of the way these old lock gates were leaking, unbeknownst to me, we were slowly losing water. In fact, when I do realize this, I'm so stuck that I've got the propeller going round. Nothing's happening. And this is after I've cleared the propeller with the dreaded fishing lure on it. And honestly, I'd never want to see that again. It's quite a scary thing with loads of hooks on it. Yeah, I tried everything to get off, but the boat was stuck. So I was rocking the boat from side to side. That's always a good technique. I was standing at the front with the barge pole. We don't show you that shot, but we show the more dangerous one of me putting the pole to use with while the propeller's going round. But yeah, neither technique worked, and that was it. I was just absolutely just stuck on top of this mound of silt that had built up. And it was pretty smelly. It wasn't that too much fun. I think right at the start I say, here's me stuck in some silt. Stuck in some silly, smelly silt. But yeah, jumped in about three times. So I was on and off the boat about three times. The first time was after I chucked my windlass in. That threw me, literally dropping my windlass in the canal. Stupid thing to do anyway. You should never chuck a windlass to the side. I did check to see if there's anyone around me, of course. But yeah, I completely missed, went straight in. So I was distracted by that because I thought, right, well, I've just got to jump off and go and get that. And then I can open the lock gates. Well, of course, I could have done that. But then I quickly realised, no, I need to go back to get my rope. And then when I got my rope, I'd forgotten I also needed the security key, handcuff key, whatever you want to call it, for the locks. The anti-vandal key was another name. So yeah, that's about at least three times. So it's just the worst ever start to the day. But got through it and I got to see my boat close up from a different angle and I got to see a lock close up. We don't particularly show this, but and I was wading right down the bottom of the lock and I really got a fantastic view of how it all works from that point, from the actual gates that slide up to let the water in out. That was really cool to see. After that, after we leave that nightmare behind, I start to talk about a windlass. And I just wanted to say here, this isn't a canal boat correction. This is just something that I think we need to have a dedicated podcast on this. A whole episode, rather. Not a whole podcast. But yeah, why do they call it a windlass and not a windlass? Well, in the episode, I say, why do they call it a windlass? I don't know. I'll have to look that one up. And we never resolve it. Now, this is mostly because there are so many differing views, theories. I've contacted all the experts that I know of in preparation for this podcast. And none of them could really come up with something. There was a lot of Scandinavian, sort of maybe old Norse words for windlass, but the actual the etymology is sort of something I can delve into with a few facts, but the actual pronunciation, why do we call it windlass? I don't quite know. Is it like winding, like the winding hole? But in that, you know, when you turn the boat around, there are special places where you can, it's a little bit wider where you can use this sort of hole, this winding hole, and they call it wind because I think that's when they used to, before they had engines, they would really need to use that wind to turn them around or anything to help them. But yeah, windlass. This needs a bit more research. I might get some experts to help me out. I'll give them a shout out as well. And if you've got your own theories, please let me know that on Facebook or on YouTube or whatever, just drop it in the comments and I'll try and give you a shout out too. After that, I mentioned my oil problem again. Now, I ended up fixing this much, much later. So we'll have to do another podcast talking about that. But shows like this one, you need a bit of jeopardy. So if I feel like something is going wrong and I need to sort of address it, even if I can't fix it straight away, I always mention it on camera because otherwise it would be very, very boring. You know, if nothing went wrong or if there wasn't the threat of something going wrong, then it would be a very relaxing show. But yeah, you need something to keep you watching it. So I did say that it was happening. I did have an oil problem. So it's true. But I'm saying it because, yeah, it's nice to have a, it sounds weird, doesn't it? But it's nice to have a little bit of jeopardy as you're filming the adventure. Gotta, you know, is something going to go wrong? Are we going to resolve it? We just don't know. And then it comes to pub of the week. Now, I don't have any pubs lined up for this feature. So the idea is that they'd pay me to appear on the show, but that just hasn't happened. Bit of advertising, I thought, for any canal side pubs, or even pubs that are slightly away from the canal. That would be fine too. So, you know, if you want me to give you a shout out and list off some events that might be happening or what's on your menu, I can do that. But so that's not happening. But what is happening is I'm going to tell you about the pub that we filmed in and why it's very difficult to film in pubs now for me. So you see just a very quick shot of me having some roast dinner, pouring some gravy, and that was it. Because it was quite difficult. I was actually with my drone pilot and producer, and yeah, we're all eating at the same time, really. But we're also there's people in the background who recognise me and they're chatting away with me. So it's just not the right sort of filming environment, really. And I do find this a lot when I'm going into pubs, especially if you're asking for permission to film. It's a little bit of a twat magnet, you know. Especially if you say, "Oh, I'm just filming for the BBC," for example. Yeah, once people get wind of that, you get a lot of politics, and you also get a lot of people who are acting up because they're generally pissed, trying to get in on the act. So yeah, it's very difficult. But this pub was fantastic. The Dog and Doublet, I can definitely recommend this one, and that's in Sutton Coldfield on the Birmingham and Faisley Canal. Next, I want to talk about the Glascott Locks, because I talk about a family that lived in the house. So there's two ways we could have gone at this point, two things to mention. This is the history that we've drawn up from our research. The Glascott Locks house there, that a family of, what was it, 9, 10, 11 people all living there at the same time. But we also spied this poem that I'm going to read out to you, because I thought it was quite amusing, and it's right by the lock itself. This one's called The Tale of Leaky Lock. So I'm just going to read this poem out to you. Here we go. And you can tell me why it might have been cut from the show. Just a note to let you know that this here lock is very slow. So take a breath, relax and smile. You might be waiting here a while. The problem is, or so we're told, is lock 13 is very old. Her paddles shot through wear and tear. The water pours out here and there. We've had them fixed, then fixed again, by some of Waterway's finest men. And for a while, the lock works well, until again they leak like hell. I pray this pause in your sojourn has made you stop to think and learn that on the cut, there is a pace that's not for those who want to race. So if you're rushing, running late, this tale of leaky lock you'll hate. So if you've no time to gently float, then why a bloody narrowboat? I really like that poem. I'm not a massive fan of poems. But I like the way that one's put together. That really works. Because poems for me, they're supposed to be music made from words. That is my personal definition of a poem anyway, which I probably got from somewhere on the internet. But yeah, I may not have pronounced sojourn correctly. I think it's sojourn, that's how you pronounce it. But yeah, I love that poem, but I think the bloody and the hell, those are words that I think they're a bit iffy on a program that might be shown on BBC, for example, because obviously yesterday UK TV, it's all sort of same sort of company, really. But yeah, the guidelines, we're trying to make it a family show, so any sort of swearing like that gets taken out. I think the only word I even said ruddy at one point, and that got cut out. I got away with poo though. I managed to say poo, so that's great. Happy with that. Right. Then I want to talk about Tamworth because, yeah, there's a bit where I'm talking about World War II history. I had quite a few takes at this one. Anything where it involves a lot of words and World War II history in particular, I know I have to get right. And right in the middle of Tamworth itself, that was interesting. But there's a guy running this van, and he's the Spud Man. He's well known. He's got his own YouTube channel and TikTok and all that sort of stuff. I think he was live streaming whilst I was doing my attempts, because he did come over at one point and just said, what are you actually doing? You know, he asked me what we were filming, so I told him. But yeah, apologies, Spud Man. We had to blur out your logo on your truck there. But yeah, I'm giving you a shout out now. And I think I heard that you had to relocate somewhere else. So I'm hoping you... So it wouldn't work if we had advertised if you were there anyway, in that area. Look, if you want to go and see the Spud Man, you'll have to look out for him. He's quite distinctive. He's got a pink Mohican, I think. And he'll be somewhere in Tamworth, I'm sure. Right, then we've got my mate Alex. Alex Argo. He's such a good laugh. He's such a great friend as well. We go back a long way to about 14, 15. As I said, we used to go skateboarding together. He got me into music, quite a bit of hip hop actually, and maybe trip hop. People like DJ Crush and grunge bands like Bush, and even Nirvana actually. I think he was the one that lent me the Nirvana album. I think it was In Utero, and that completely changed my outlook on music. I was like, wow, I didn't realize this sort of music was available, because I'd to that point in my upbringing, it was all about Radio 1. That's all I knew, because my parents weren't massively into music. It was more sort of maybe some older hits from when they were themselves that age or students. So yeah, I can talk about music another time, I think. But yeah, Alex, brilliant to have him there. His company is interesting, Burwood Works. So there's all kinds of carpentry, woodworking. They do frames, timber structures. It's traditional, high quality stuff. And he was so good to actually do what he's done for me. Because, I mean, yeah, it was everyone's been commenting when they see it on the front of the boat. They're like, wow, this looks really nice. And it is. It's just proper workmanship. And they do joinery structures, cabinets and kitchens as well. So all kinds of stuff, really. Just not, they don't specialize in narrowboats. I mean, there's always a long waiting list for getting fit outs and things for narrowboats, so he'd do well. But yeah, if you want to see a picture of us together, actually, you can either check on my Instagram, or you can go to burwoodworks.co.uk, and the about section has a nice little photo of us together there, and there's more details of what he does. And he's based on the sort of Dorset Wiltshire border, somewhere near there. So near Shaftesbury. And yeah, he's a really good lad. I definitely recommend. He actually stayed over the night before so we could have a good catch up. So even though it appears like he's just come along for the day all the way from Dorset, just come along for a few minutes, he was there a lot longer. And then that was all I want. That's all I want to say about this episode. On the next one, I'll talk about the next one, and we'll get a bit more detail on the compost toilets, I imagine. But yeah, I hope you're enjoying these. And yeah, I'm just going to sign off and say thanks for listening and keep on cracking. Cheers. Bye.